Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Welcome back in, everybody, on Sports Daily. Jacob Albrecht, Tommy Kester here. It is hour number two. The IHOP hotline is back open. It's, of course, brought to you by IHOP. You can celebrate the weekdays now with the new IHOP House Faves, all your favorites for just $6 Monday through Friday. You can also get in touch with the program by leaving us comments on our video streams. The YouTube stream has been hopping this morning with some comments. You can also do that on Facebook and on X. You can also, of course, catch us on the 12 News Connected app on your smart devices. Your phone, your smart TVs, your computers, whatever it is. Now, we appreciate you tuning in to watch us, and your voice messages are welcome as well through the Odyssey app. You just click the little microphone, you go there. We start hour number two and tell you this portion of the program is brought to you by Crestview Country Club. Good way to start the game off tonight. Head up to the bar, have a beer, maybe get some wings, watch the game. Go check out Crestview's facilities if you haven't. It's the 36 holes of golf that everybody knows about. But it's far more than that. Tommy and I, both members, we really enjoy our time over there. Tell them Sports Daily sent you. Rick points out that Mecole Hardman has a knee issue too, Tommy. I don't think of Mecole Hardman as a factor in this offense, no matter who's hurt and not hurt. I think he's a gadget player, and I think he's there for special teams. But it's something to pay attention to. And you sent me something. So Justin Ross and Nico Remigio were getting the reps. I think it's Justin Watson. I think it's Noah Gray, and I think it's Travis Kelce. Are the big pass catch. If either one of those other guys are a factor, that's great. I don't think they will be much of one. I think it's going to be a lot of tight ends, a lot of running back usage, that kind of a thing. Much like we saw, honestly, when Rice went down, and I would suspect that Watson is the guy that takes some of those targets away more than the others from. You know, from Rashee Rice.
Yeah, I think that Juju does as well. And I also think
he's been strange, hadn't he? Juju, yeah. Like he does, he must not have much. And I love that he's there and he's been a great blocker.
Yeah.
But if he was limited, you know, 2 years ago, he's really limited. He's really limited now.
You know, and I do think that, you know, you can't forget that Xavier Worthy poses that, you know, deep ball threat basically at any moment. And so if Mahomes can get into a volume situation, and I think that the guys that you listed off really fit into that volume type play, whether it's Kelce or Gray, Watson, you know, maybe Juju to an extent, then that does open things up a little bit for Mahomes to be able to take some shots. And if he's able to do that, of course, that's probably going to be an Xavier Worthy type play.
Yeah, I mean, Worthy's the X factor, right? Worthy is the guy that I think nationally people are like, oh, first round pick, he's going to slot right in and get a ton of targets. Okay. I don't think he's ready for that, but we didn't know Rashee Rice was ready for it until he was ready for it, right? Is Worthy all of a sudden ready for it? Maybe. I would say it's more likely after the bye week than this game. But yeah, and if he's getting one or two shots a game, maybe he gets five, right? Like maybe they just go ultra aggressive with him. Would love to see it, but they have to allow themselves to play that way. I don't know, Tommy. I love Worthy and what he brings to the offense. I think it was a good pick. Don't misunderstand what I'm going to say here, but I just don't see him as that guy. I don't.
As far as being a volume type guy?
A target monster.
Yeah, yes. I'm not sure that that's really his role.
I don't know that it ever will be. I guess is my point. Like we wouldn't have thought that about Tyreek Hill either. Now they have different body types. They're both really fast. Tyreek Hill's big, short, but big. Worthy's not that. You know, when you look at size, so I would never see him as more than a 7-8 target a game guy, and that would be like at the high end. If he gets that, I think that's that's pretty good. But I think when we think about the Chiefs' offense post Rashee Rice, we can't put that kind of. And I know people will like, oh, Worthy's a totally different player than Rice, totally different. And I just don't know that that's in their best interest. I think their best interest is to have somebody like Watson. If you're going to just pepper somebody with targets, let it be him and let Worthy still be your shot play. Because the way their defense is, right? That's what you want. You want a defense to keep a game close and then Worthy to just take the top off a few times.
I think that that's right. And I you know, again, the big issue becomes who can consistently get the volume of catches. And it doesn't necessarily have to be just one guy. It can be several different players, but they've got to be effective in doing it. They've got to be consistent in doing it. And so that goes back to, I think that you mentioned that, you know, this guy and he would be somebody that I would consider probably the main beneficiary of all of this. And that's Justin Watson. And that's because of the trust that he's built up with Patrick Mahomes, where while he's never going to wow you athletically, he's never going to do anything that you're going to be like, man, that guy's a fantastic receiver. He's fairly consistent, you know, and that's, you kind of know what you're going to get with him. And inside an offense where, by and large, you don't know what you're going to get with that offense from game to game because of the injuries and because of just a lot of different factors and components that play into it, the reliability, I think, is probably paramount. Because if you can lean on that, then like to your point, that hopefully will take the top off the defense a little bit more. So I'm really looking at a recipe or a formula of Kareem Hunt being able to soften up the defense, Justin Watson specifically being able to connect with Mahomes on, you know, I'm probably looking at 5 to 7 targets where he can, you know, reliably catch the ball and maybe even move the chains. And then at that point, you're taking the top off and you can hit Kelsey over the top, or you can hit Worthy down the sideline. Like there are some opportunities there, but other things have to set itself up first before you can then take those bigger shots.
Watson, I think the biggest difference between Watson and Rice is Watson after the catch, right? I think Watson can run the right route and catch the ball, which is a bit, and I think Patrick Mahomes has his trust, right? And that's what he's just not going to rip him off like Rice does sometimes. But that will be the biggest difference, right? Can they play the style of offense they want without Rashi Rice? They haven't had to do that in a really long time. And so we don't really know. All we know is post-injury in the Chargers game, they've had Rice be in this role now since whatever it was, without looking like week 4 or 5 of last year. Like, they've had that, and Mahomes has had that. And I know it's a little frightening to think of Mahomes without Rice, because Mahomes hasn't been, you know, like stat monster Mahomes, even with Rice. What's he going to be without him? I'm not sure. We look at the two quarterbacks tonight. Derek Carr's been better than Patrick Mahomes this year. You know, roll your eyes, whatever. You know, statistically speaking, he has been. And so Mahomes has got to play better too, but he's got to do it now without his top target. And that'll be really interesting to see. I think he will. I just don't know how he will.
He's got to have a cleaner game. I mean, that's going to be the biggest thing. I mean,
there's less room for error.
There's less margin. But then on top of that, I also wonder if the way that everything has kind of played out with Rashi Rice and, you know, some of these injuries that have popped up, I think it kind of forces Mahomes to, I don't even want to use the word conservative, because I don't think that's fair. That word gets a bad rap, but I think it forces him to be more careful.
The whole league is conservative right now.
I get it, but like that has a negative connotation to it.
Right.
You know, I just mean that if you don't have your full arsenal of exciting weapons, that may kind of make you take a step back a little bit and say, okay, like I can't always lean on my receivers to go out and get it. I can just put it up there and they're going to go up and get it. I've got to be a little bit more nuanced. I've got to be a little bit more careful, a little bit more cautious, and make sure that the reads and the progressions that I'm going through, everything is there, because that margin of error, like you mentioned, is a lot smaller now than it was even a week ago. And let's be honest. I mean, I think it's okay to call a spade a spade. Mahomes didn't have a great month of September. He didn't. From a statistical point of view, he was kind of middle of the road. He turned the ball over too much. It was uncharacteristic of Patrick Mahomes in the month of September. Now, the team won all their games, so by and large, I think you can live with that. But again, you've got to make sure that, especially now without your wide receiver one, and who knows how long he's going to be out, you've got to be a lot cleaner. You've got to take care of the football that much more, because you don't have that weapon out there to be able to do things for you.
Well, and when we talk about Mahomes, I have every intention of getting to the Saints, but when we talk about Mahomes, it's a relative thing to say he didn't have a good September, because he didn't, by his own standard. They won every game they played in September.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and I don't mean that just like as a crutch. I mean it as he is making more mistakes and missing more throws than we're accustomed to. But the magical stuff late in games, the intangible stuff that we talk about with Mahomes, that's all still there. Or they wouldn't be 4-0. They wouldn't be. I mean, the ability to lead the team late, the ability to make those things happen, that's also a part of what makes Mahomes Mahomes. And so he's been doing that, but statistically, yeah, it hasn't been there. So how much better statistically does he need to be? I don't know. They're 4-0 against four pretty good teams.
I don't know if you can draw that comparison or that conclusion that the reason that they're 4-0 is because of just the intangibles that Mahomes brings. Like, that's part of it. That's part of the equation. Their defense has been really good. And, you know, especially stopping the run.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so like there have been a couple of times that they've been, you know, on the brink. It wasn't Mahomes that kept them from, that led them to beat the Ravens in the first game. It was, a play at the very end to Isaiah Likely in the back of the end zone where he stepped out of bounds. Mahomes wasn't even on the field for that. You know,
but
so
he,
like,
he had the touchdown before that,
did.
Right? Didn't he lead them on the touchdown?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. But, it's all combined into one.
Let me put it this way. Did you watch the game last night? It was late, so I mean, forgive you
some
if you
of
did
it.
Not.
Yeah, a little bit of it.
Mahomes isn't doing what Dak was doing, right? Like what trying to give these games away. What Fields did.
Dak late. Got him a victory. I mean, got him a victory at the very end.
It was a great final drive. If you had to watch that game like all the way through, you'd know exactly what I'm talking about. He had three red zone turnovers, essentially. Oh my, like literally anything, like understand the flow of the game and know that you can do anything else. Kick the field goals, you'll win the game. Like that's the kind of stuff where Mahomes is just like mechanical brain is still ticking perfectly. And so it's unlikely that he'll do a lot of things, especially late in the game, to cost his team the game. And this year in the NFL, that's a big deal. Josh Allen, they lost the game because they decided to throw the ball three times. And I haven't gone to look and seen who's responsible for that. If that was a coaching decision or Allen making those calls, I don't know. But like we see this all the time across the Joe Burrow had a late interception yesterday after a magnificent game. He had a crucial pick late. And I'm not, that one's probably a little bit less so because they did need to score at that moment. But if Mahomes can just do what he's done, obviously we want him to limit the turnovers. Certainly we do. They'll be okay. Because on the other side, he's got a defense that's been ahead of schedule. I'll call it that. And you've got the Saints here with Carr in prime time. I like the Chiefs tonight because I like the defense's chances to do something. They should be able to take away Chris Olave, don't you think? I mean, if you're looking at this from a Chiefs perspective with McDuffie and the way Watson's played, I think they can at least limit Olave and make somebody else beat them. They've got other good players. Rashid Shaheed's good. Alvin Kamara's obviously good. But so is the Chiefs defense. I like them in this matchup because I do think everything funnels through those three guys. And they have been able to, at least thus far, focus in on other team star players and do a pretty good job this year. That's why I like the Chiefs tonight.
Yeah,
I think it's a good matchup.
For me, it's less about them limiting Chris Olave in the passing game, and it's more about them continuing to do what they've done against the lead backs on the opposition. Like they have really done a great job. And like, watching Derrick Henry yesterday, he obviously has been incredible this entire season. And outside of that opening game, the Chiefs really limited him. They've done the same thing. They did it with Bijan Robinson. They did it with Zach Moss. They've got the chance to do it against Alvin Kamara tonight. And that's an unexpected part of that defense that I think has come along so well this season. And it's not to take anything away from guys like Trent McDuffie or, other players in the secondary. But the expectation, I think, is higher in the passing defense than I don't know if anybody came into this season thinking, man, the Chiefs are going to be a really good run stopping team. I don't think anybody thought that. That wasn't the narrative at all. So that's been an unexpected surprise and something that at least through four games they've been able to really lean on. And I think that knowing that we have a four-game sample size of that, I would look at them to continue that tonight against Kamara. That's why I think that ultimately the Chiefs will win.
I agree. I think they've done a really good job, though, limiting other players' best players. And the Saints have funneled everything through a small number of players this year. And I think Spags, that's good for Spags. If you know that, if you can stop, you know, probably two of those three, or maybe even one of those three, that your chances are pretty good. That I love the Chiefs defense in those types of situations. They have historically, not as much this year, not been elite, at least, we'll call it to be nice, against pass catching backs either. And they're going to get, you know, the best one of the last, I don't know, decade, at least, in Alvin Kamara tonight. And I know he's older, but you got to remember who Alvin Kamara is. He's absolute elite pass catcher. And so the Saints, if I'm the Saints, that's what I'm doing. I'm throwing it to Kamara a lot tonight. And the Chiefs have to score. The one thing that I don't, you know, like have off the top of my head is how good, or even as I look at it and try to, I don't know how good the Saints defense is. I don't think it's that good. I think it's okay. So what do we do with the game? We both like the cover. The over-under at 43, Tom, I don't have a strong feel on the over-under. I like Kelsey props. I will say that. And I probably like Hunt props.
I love
Hunt props. But I don't like the over-under.
I mean, think about it this way. And I know that sometimes you can get caught up in the emotion of things. But this is a homecoming for Kareem Hunt. You know, he played last week, but this is his first game back inside Arrowhead.
Yeah, that's
in 6 years that I don't think anybody really thought, ever thought. I don't even think he thought that he would be back in that position.
No.
And the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that everything is lining up perfectly for that homecoming because he got back into game action last week. You had the Carson Steele fumbles. You saw Hunt kind of be the hot hand. He was effective to where they kept feeding him the ball against the Chargers. Now you're back at home in front of a fan base that they haven't seen you in the last half decade plus. I think the stars are aligning for a really big Kareem Hunt game.
Well, and if I told you, you know, outside of the obviously Patrick Mahomes is what he is. But if I asked you the question right now, what is the strength of the Chiefs offense? What would you tell me?
The running game.
I would tell you the middle of the offensive line, the interior, the center and the two guards. That's what I would say is the strength of the Chiefs offense. And they must, they must be able to commit to that. And I think their defense allows them to do it, right? Just commit to it. And I don't really care what's happening. Even if the Saints are selling out and it's not super effective for two or three drives, unless the defense falls apart, I think you go to it and you stick with it because it is right now with all the injuries and everything this team is dealing with, I would say the two biggest points of strength are the secondary and the interior offensive line. So let's utilize both of those things if you're the, and I think they will. I would bet you Kareem Hunt is ambitious, but I think it'll be at least 20 touches tonight.
I don't disagree with that. And if he does that and he's effective, you know, again, that's going to soften up.
I can get it even if he's not effective.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that that's, you know, clearly going to soften up the Saints defense. But on top of that, I mean, going back to the over-under, if you're leaning on the running game, you know, I don't know. I think the under is probably favored. I'm going to stay away from it entirely.
I'm staying away from the over-under.
But if I had to choose one side or the other, I'd probably lean under just because I think I know, you know, what direction they're going to want to go. And it's not like the Chiefs have been this, you know, prolific offense. Now, the Saints had been the first couple of weeks of the season, but I'm not sure that that's going to carry on.
Yeah, yes. It should be a fun game. It should be a fun game. Last question on this, and then we'll talk Royals next. How many shots would you take to Worthy? Just straight over the top shots to Worthy. I'd take at least three if I'm Andy Reid.
Depends on the situation. It's all situational. I mean, that's not really me committing to anything. I mean, I'm not going to put a number on it. If they're the right opportunities, then they can throw it to him over the top 10 times for all I care.
I'm asking for a prediction here. Like, how many just straight shots will they take? Because I think it'll be at least three. The reason I ask it is, what's the only way defensively that you make sure they don't do that. You keep somebody over the top over there, right? That's why I like Kelce in this game.
Somebody like Tyrann Mathieu?
It doesn't matter. You got to keep two people. The only way you keep Patrick Mahomes from not taking that shot lots of times is to make sure there's a safety over there. That's it. Because if he's got single coverage, I don't care who it is. He's going to say, go as fast as you can, and I'm going to just like he did the other day. Do you see how I described that play? I told him I'm going to throw it as far as I can, run as fast, basically run as fast as you can. Let's see what happens. They'll do that lots in this offense without Rashi Rice, as long as teams don't put a safety over there. And if they put a safety over there, that's why I kind of like Kelce to pick things up lately. That's where I love Kelce props tonight. Because if a safety's over there, a safety's not in there, and they're going to have to leave linebackers in to help stop the run, I think this is an opportunity for Kelce tonight. That's why I bring that up with Worthy. Whereas Rice, you don't feel like you need to do that. They kind of need to do it now. And so I think they will. Monday Night Football, you can hear it over on KNSS, your home of Chiefs football, the Chiefs Radio Network, 98.7. We're looking forward to it tonight. We're also looking forward to Royals baseball. Coverage of these two games begins at the same time. How fun is that? Let's get Tommy's thoughts on Game 1, and we'll dig into Game 2. Royals, ALDS. Your calls welcome, 869-1240. We're coming right back. More Sports Daily after this.
.975 and 1240 KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. Let's give away a little HTO here. It's pretty easy for you to win. We've got an opportunity to win a free iced tea, more than 20 flavors to choose from, including the all new peach cobbler. It's back. You can enter by texting the keyword TEA to the short code 20357. That is the number there. You can also win some free coffee from us, featuring free rain coffee, iced, hot, however you like it, by also texting that keyword TEA to 20357. Good luck, everybody. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Tommy, the Royals, down 0-1. You missed the beginning. I would ask the question. I do not feel desperation today. I do not. Ken, great Royals fans, chimes in. Witt, Perez, Pasquatch combined 1-for-14. The Royals were still in the game. That's a part of it for me. They were not expected to beat Cole anyway, especially with Waka on the mound. Missed opportunity, yes. Desperation time, I don't think so. I don't think so. And I think they'll win tonight. I think that if anything, they should take confidence from that. Use whatever you want. You can use the call on at second base. You can use the called strike three to, you know, to Bobby Witt. You can use whatever you want. But if you're the Royals going into game two, you do not feel outmatched in this series at all.
No, I don't think outmatched is the mindset or the mentality of this team whatsoever. And, you know, I would agree with you that desperation is probably too strong of a word because I don't think they feel desperate, and I don't think that they should feel desperate. But I do think that they should feel the urgency. I think that they should feel, you know, the absolute importantness of them, you know, getting game two. You can't fall two games to none. You know, with then you have to have your, you know, best A game for three games in a row. I just don't see that being, you know, something the Royals can overcome. So while they're not desperate tonight, I do think that you've got to understand what's at stake if you don't win that game tonight. And that's got to fuel them for sure. But yeah, I don't think that they're outmatched. I never got the sense in the game on Saturday that they felt like they were outmatched whatsoever. It was you know, punch counterpunch between both of these teams, going back and forth. It was so much fun to watch.
It's a great baseball game.
And knowing that, as Ken mentioned, Witt, Perez, and Pasquantino didn't really deliver. They were getting their offense from other places in that lineup. And so knowing that, I don't think that you walk away from game one feeling overmatched at all. I think you go away from it thinking we can hang with this team. In fact, we can probably hang with any team in Major League Baseball as long as we've got, you know, the right stuff going. And they've got to get that right stuff tonight. I think it's going to help a lot, obviously, that they've got Reagans on the hill.
Five-game series are strange. If it was a seven-game series, it's an even easier answer. No desperation at all.
Yeah.
I mean, I think you always feel desperation in the postseason, but it does not feel like, to me, the Royals' backs are against the wall. And I think them playing free and easy, play the exact same game offensively you played, you know, Monday, and you win this game, or Saturday, and you win this game Monday. That's sort of how I feel about it. So there are times in a playoff series where you get through the first game and you're like, oh, crap. Like, we're going to have to play perfect baseball if we're going to beat this team. I don't think that's the case. I think Reagans against this lineup can be advantageous. They strike out. He strikes people out, right? Rodon has had two good starts against the Royals this year. I don't really know what to make of that because so much of this offense is different than what he saw. Right, in either game, between Pham and Gurriel being in there now, the second time, I don't believe they were there when he faced them in June. They wouldn't have been there when he faced them in June. And then you go back to his early season start, it's like a totally different offense out there. So I don't know what to make of Rodon's role in this, but I do know that the Royals, you know, you came into the series saying Gerrit Cole can't beat us three times in this series. And that's what you felt good about if you were the Royals. You need to certainly win your Reagans and Lugo starts. I mean, but we knew that. That's what we already knew that. Like, we knew that was their ticket. And so now they have this chance to do it. I think there is, I don't want to say no chance. It's unlikely, Tommy, that the middle of the lineup is as unproductive as they were in that game. And largely have been. I mean, Bobby Witt Jr. had some clutch hits in the Orioles series, but none of those three dudes are hitting for power right now. Every day that goes by makes me think that piece will wake up. Like, they're going to wake up and start to provide a little pop in the middle of the lineup.
We also don't know, you know, what percentage Vinny Pasquantino actually is in swinging the bat. Like, I know that, you know, he's been able to, you know, hit some home runs in batting practice and things like that. We don't know what the status of that thumb is, and really, is that affecting his swing? Is it affecting his contact, the power, all of that? And we just don't know that, but I do think that even the threat of him being in the lineup, the threat of potentially, you know, being productive, that benefit outweighs any kind of risk on, you know, maybe he's not going to be super effective.
Yeah, I think he's okay. I think he's fine. He doesn't have a ton of power anyway. Right. He's not even, I don't even know if he's going to be a 30-35 home run guy. But he's got extra base power. Can he get you a double? He's so patient at the plate. He's so clutch in, you know, with runners in scoring position. That's what they need out of him. They need power out of Salvador Perez more than anybody else, I would say. He, to me, of watching those three, is the one that looks the most off his game. Bobby Witt Jr. doesn't look off his game. Bobby Witt Jr. looks fine, and I think will be fine. Salvador Perez is the one who's not patient enough for my taste right now at the plate. I'll put it that way. You think about all the things in game one, him getting gunned down at the plate, his play to throw out the runner at second. Where did you land with that call, by the way? I thought it was not definitive enough. I think had they called him out, they wouldn't have been able to overturn it, just like they called him safe and they wouldn't have been able to overturn it. It was that close. That was as close as you can be. That was wild.
Daylight. I'm just going to use the word daylight. I mean, you could see daylight. You could see light, you know, between the glove and the base.
The
you know,
problem, I could see that. The problem that I couldn't see, and the problem that I couldn't see is because from that angle, you could see daylight. You didn't have the angle to see the split second the leather touched the leather from glove to shoe. And that's so you couldn't, unless they have some way to like sync up by time code somehow, both of those angles. The problem for me was that angle, you could see the sliver. You could not see the moment the glove touched the foot definitively. And so that's why, again, had they called him out, I don't think they would have overturned that either. It's just the fact, and we all, everybody on the planet in real time thought he was safe. It looked like the throw was way late, but it's tough. That is tough. That is a tough call.
Tough break. I mean, you know, yeah. a game altering call that ultimately went the Yankees way. Right. And like, what's unfortunate. And I thought about this a lot yesterday. What's unfortunate is that particular play and the review and the controversy around it took away from what was an incredible baseball game, incredible playoff baseball with a back and forth chess match between two teams that, you know, one would take the lead and the other one would take the lead and then back and forth and back and forth. That's not what people were talking about yesterday. They were talking about the Jazz Chisholm call.
That's not what Royals fans were talking about. We'll put it that way. I was probably more bothered by the strike three call on Bobby Witt Jr. in the night
that was than
I was the out call, quite frankly, because I thought that one was it. Like, can we get to the point in baseball? And I'm not for robot umpires, but we all have the square. Like, that technology is not too good to not be able to do a quick review. You get two a game, whatever it is. Just get two strike call challenges a game if that's the way you want to do it, because it's real easy. If no part of the circle is touching the square, it's a ball. If any part of the circle is touching the square, it's a strike. How would an umpire never get that wrong? So just give in those big moments, right? Give the opportunity to take a look at it, because that's in the bottom of the ninth of the top of the ninth of a playoff game. And it was a ball.
Yeah, I think that
against the most exciting player in the American League, by the way.
Don't you think that square, though, because I think about this a lot, that square provides you kind of a false sense of like a definitive strike zone? Like, because
I think it gives us a true sense.
Maybe it does, but the umpires behind the plate don't see that square. You know?
I know. So, that's like, what I mean.
What I'm saying is that, like,
give them a challenge.
If you didn't have that square on your TV screen, the umpires are still going to make the same call. They're still going to do what they're doing.
I'm just saying,
like, there wouldn't be the, you know, the guys on their couch like you and me that are like, oh, that's a ball, that's a bad call, whatever. You know, you don't have the box, you don't have that context, that frame to be able to say that's right or wrong. You just go with what the umpires call. And now they're going to be egregious calls that everybody knows are not correct. But the borderline ones, you kind of, I don't know, I think you kind of shut down the argument a little bit when you don't have that frame on your screen for every pitch.
But baseball has it. Like, we have the technology, let's use it. Because we also don't have the keen eye of Bobby Witt Jr., who knew that wasn't a strike, and it wasn't a strike, right? So if we have the technology sitting there, which we clearly do, then just use it in the biggest moments of a game. Like, you just allow yourself to use the technology, just like you do with the other replays. There's no reason you can't replay that. You have the square. The umpires don't. I'm not blaming the umpire. That was a close call in the strike zone. I think baseball would be better if you didn't have the variable of a non-consistent strike zone. Could you imagine if we didn't use first down markers in football and we just went by of wherever the ref thinks the first down line is? Like, we don't allow that. Could you imagine in the NBA not going back to see if a toe was on the line of a three-pointer? Like, we have this technology. We use it all the time. But we pretend like balls and strikes are this unspoken. You can't argue balls and strikes. You can't do anything. It's sitting there.
I just don't
use it.
Even if they do, I just don't have any faith that it's going to be used correctly, that it's going to ultimately end up helping situations at all. Because, I mean, like, going back to the review on the stolen base with Jazz Chisholm, I don't know. I think it was pretty definitive that Chisholm was out. And they reviewed it and they still stuck with safe. I think that happens. That's going to happen more often than not if you just load the game up more with review after review after review.
It's not that. This one seems easy to me because if the circle touches the square, it's a strike. If it does not, it's a ball. There is no room for, like, the human element of that. Now, I will say this, the broadcast teams use the squares. So does baseball agree with the squares all the time? That would be the wrinkle to work out. Is it the same technology across the board? Can that be somehow utilized? Because what you can't do with balls and if that's not the case, then you can't do this. Because if you're just going to try to review, like, was the ball above or below his knee, or where was the plane, you know, is the ball, you have to, if the technology's not there, then forget everything I'm saying right now. If it's just broadcast technology and not actual baseball ability to use, then everything I'm saying is irrelevant. But if it is, like, if that's the same square and it's just fed to the broadcast teams, then use the square. If in a moment like that, be able to use it. I don't know whether that is or that isn't technology wise. It just sucks when, and it's more, almost just said a bad word. It's more sucky in the more egregious calls, right? I agree with that, where it's like a foot outside and they ring somebody up. That also needs to be taken away somehow. Even if that's just somebody in New York watching and be like, yo, dude, that was a terrible call. That's not a strike. I don't know. It's fine. Everything's fine. The point of this for me is everything's fine. The Royals are not in a, they're going to be just fine. I think they win tonight. And then we start the series over in a three-game series, and we'll evaluate that as we make our way through. But I think they're okay. I that was such an incredible baseball game Saturday night. Man, that was good.
It was fun. It was fun. We'll continue tonight for sure. I really want to think that at least a portion of the middle of that lineup will be able to bounce back tonight. And more than likely, it's going to be probably Witt out of the three. But man, I want to see Salvi have a really strong game.
It'll be the biggest difference. It'll be the 100%. Biggest difference in their postseason is if he gets going. He is the streakiest, most, like, cannot get him out when he's going right player, I think, in the offense. The stark difference, I should say, between where he is now, which is waving at everything low and away on 0-2 to where he is when he's locked in. Bobby Witt Jr. is more consistent. That's why I wouldn't, he's a tougher out, but he's more consistent. He's always a tougher out. Right now, Salvador Perez is gettable, and he's got to probably just get a few walks more than anything to bounce that back. But you'll hear that game tonight on KFH. It's a 6:38 first pitch. Coverage begins at 6:00 here on KFH. Let's look at the rest of, well, no, you know what? Let's do when we come back. Let's talk KU. We'll react to the rest of the NFL tomorrow. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we have to. I know. I feel the same. We'll come back with it. It's all Brockton Caster at Sports Daily.
...97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Go. Let's talk some KU football. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster with you on Sports Daily. Another loss to Arizona State. Another late game loss for KU. If you count the late game losses, they could just as easily be, what would it be, 4-2 as 1-5. This one was interesting to the fact that I don't think we can lay the blame on the offensive coordinator or the quarterback for this one, Tommy. Like, they both made progress, I thought, in this game. Daniels looked far more like himself than we've seen all season long. Still not quite as accurate as he has been historically, but much, 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 much better. The play calling, I don't remember a point, and I was watching the Royals, so I jumped in the second half. But listen, I didn't think there was any point where I was like, oh, Grimes is just blowing. It was the defense, and I don't even know what to say now. You give up 35 points to Arizona State. If they can't play good defense, they're toast.
Well, Kansas defensively, they're making opposing quarterbacks out there look like Michael Vick every time they play. I mean, you've got these quarterbacks that are running wild over the Jayhawk defense, and the guy from UNLV did it. The guy from TCU did it. And then, of course, on Saturday, the guy from Arizona State did it too. That's a major issue. And just defensively as a whole, they are they're not getting it done. And it's insane how it's changed from a few weeks ago to now, where the defense was the only thing keeping them in ball games. And now all of a sudden, it's done a complete flip flop, a complete 180. Now the defense is the issue, but the offense is getting it figured out. One thing that has been consistent, I think, though, is that the game management continues to be an issue for the Jayhawks. They're not doing a great job at that. The way they closed out the first half was awful, and that's really where they lost the game. You know, they let Arizona State convert a fake punt. Ultimately, that tied the game at halftime, and then from there, we all know what happened. So it's mind-numbingly infuriating that in all of the five losses in a row, the Jayhawks have had an expected the percentage of expected win percentage has been like in the 70 to 80 to 90% in the fourth quarter in every single game in the five game losing streak. And they can't figure it out. They cannot close these games out. They've got to make some changes. I'm at a point now where I don't even really care what it is. They've got to do something. I was a little bit more at the beginning, like really kind of spearheaded into, I feel like they need to do this one particular thing. Now I really don't care what they do. Like, just make some changes. You can't keep doing this. If you want to get rid of both coordinators, that's fine with me. It doesn't really matter. Just do something.
That's been my thing the whole way through, the refusal to do anything. And, you know, there was a point where to me it needed to be Jalen Daniels. There's been other, like, I that's the part to me that has just blown my mind since the UNLV loss, is like, why aren't they doing something? Why aren't they doing something to put the fear of God into the players? Like, what, like, is anybody safe right now? I would say no. And because what's the alternative, right? It's not working. Do something else. Is it been unfortunate? Sure, it has. It has been. But the problem for me as somebody who watches it, and some of this has to bleed on to the side. I remember it was a UNLV game when KU got the ball the last time they got the ball, thinking there was absolutely no chance they were going down and scoring, right? It felt the same way at the end of this Arizona State game. Whenever they had the long touchdown catch and it was being reviewed, I'm not even like, it's not even a joke. I was like, I kind of hope they call this incomplete.
Yeah.
Because if Arizona State gets the ball back, they're scoring.
You and I were texting back and forth. I'm like, they left him too much time. They left Arizona State too much time.
Call it incomplete. Just
from watching the way that entire game defensively played out, there was no way that the Jayhawks defensively were stopping Arizona State.
Yeah. And so my point is, like, if we're seeing this and thinking this, and everybody, like, the sidelines feel got that same lingering shadow over them. Like, they've got to be feeling the same thing. And so the reality is they're not as good as we thought they would be. They're just not. But I don't, what I don't still don't know is how far off of that are they? And we're never going to find out if they don't do something to snap out of this. You know, their Big 12 chances, all that, those are obviously gone. Can they still make a bowl game? Maybe. Are they still, you know, because we saw Jalen Daniels play better.
They're
going
to have to win out. If they want a bowl game, they're going to have to, you know, that margin of error is not there.
So, you know, can they be competitive? If you're a KU fan, can they put up a fight against K-State? Like, all of those things. I made the joke, I think, to you, like, maybe they should just, you know, tank for the number one overall draft pick. Like, you don't get that in college football, right? Like, you still got to salvage a season. You're building a new stadium. All of these seniors are gone. Now, maybe that's a good thing, the way they've been playing, but they're all gone. And we know the recruiting hasn't been the same as it was when these players were all recruited. So it's been good. It's been good. But, man, I hate this so much. Absolute nightmare scenario. Nightmare. We'll come back. We'll tell you what's on the network tonight. It's an exciting night of sports here with us at Odyssey. We'll tell you all about it next.